and the birds love it. Cindy said she knew instantly we would love the place. She made an offer for it that day. That was in 1983. The property was about a quarter of the size that it is today. We only had the one little cabin then. We soon built a guest cottage across an irrigation ditch from our house. In the 1990s, we bought the adjacent property to house our kids as they got older, and we added a deck to it, where I used to grill our meals. Our friends the Harpers have a home next to us. Not long after, we bought two small places near the south bend of the creek as guest houses. We built a new main house in 2010 to replace the original cabin, and we just finished building a new place for our kids, who are starting families of their own now. But the improvements we made that matter most to me are not architectural, but natural. We planted more cottonwoods and fruit trees, mimosas and mulberry bushes for the birds, flowers of all kinds, with rose vines clinging to the fences. We established rolling lawns of rich green grass, shaded by tree canopies and shimmering in the light filtered through the foliage. We dug ponds and stocked them with fish. It was called Hidden Valley Ranch before we owned it. Now it's practically invisible. From the tops of the surrounding hills, you can barely make out the structures and roads below. It's just a mass of green, wooded and lush, with a symphony of bird song in the air and the buzz of cicadas in summer. So many birds make their home here. 68 different species, the Audubon Society estimates, from hummingbirds darting around the mimosas to a pair of black hawks, a protected species, that return each spring to a nest in a sycamore. They teach their fledgling to fly and hunt, taking advantage of the fish in the creek and the trust that has come to exist between them and us before flying back to Mexico for the winter. Several years ago, we bought land on the other side of the creek, the Ghost Ranch, as we call it, from the heirs of the self-sufficient old couple who had been the last to ranch here. We're turning it into a wildlife sanctuary to attract even more birds, planting only what is native to the area, cactus and desert willow. When we're finished, the Audubon Society will designate it a special birding area, and the thought of that pleases me very much. There are Indian caves in the hills and waterfalls past the creek bends and all kinds of wildlife. Deer, javelina, coyote, fox and skunk, and rattlesnakes. We had a cougar one summer, but they're transient animals and he moved on after he had culled the deer population. We spent all the time we could here. We celebrated holidays and birthdays. We swam in the creek, fished the ponds, hiked the hills, and barbecued. The place always teemed with kids, our own and the Harpers and their friends. Until the mid-2000s, when I started spending the 4th of July with the troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, we always celebrated the holiday here with dozens of friends we invited for all manners of recreation, wiffle ball games, forced marches up the hills to an Indian cave, swimming at the falls, lively dinners along the bank of the creek. We came here after elections to celebrate victories and for consolation after losses. The prescription for both included grilled ribs and a slowly sipped vodka on ice. The McCain Institute convenes a weekend forum every spring at a resort in Sedona, attended by prominent figures in government, business, education, and the military. Foreign and defense ministers and even a few heads of government have come. We host a dinner on Saturday night for the attendees. It's especially beautiful here in the spring, and the property has made such an impression on our guests, the word of Hidden Valley's charms has spread worldwide. Carlos Slim, the billionaire from Mexico City, one of the world's wealthiest men, told me he thought it was one of the nicest places he had ever been. I receive regular solicitations from senior officials of foreign governments. I hear you have a beautiful place near Sedona. I'd love to see it someday. Yes, I loved it when I first saw it and had a vision of what it might become. And now we're nearly there, and I love it all the more. I lived so much of my life on the move, compensated in other ways for the hometown I was denied. I had no connection to one place, no safe harbor where I could rest carelessly. Landscapes and communities pass too quickly to form lasting attachments of shared history that calm you when old age finally confounds your restlessness. I was almost 45 when I moved to Arizona. In the nearly 4 decades that have passed since, Arizona has enchanted and claimed me. Near the end of his life, Barry Goldwater, a great outdoorsman, tried to describe his affection for the state. Arizona is 113,400 square miles of heaven that God cut out. Then he paused to choke back tears before managing to add, "I love it so much." I've experienced every scene of spectacular natural beauty this magnificent state possesses. I've hiked Canyon de Chelly and the Grand Canyon rim to rim. I've rafted down the Colorado and houseboated on Lake Powell. I've walked the trails in Saguaro National Park, been struck mute by the landscape of Monument Valley, and spent countless hours happily following hidden paths in wilderness areas. I've driven through the desert in the spring after a wet winter and gasped at the profusion of color, the mesmerizing beauty of desert wildflowers in sudden bloom. I love it so much, and I'm so grateful for the privilege of representing the state and its people in the United States Senate. I've been to just about every community that Arizonans carved from the wilderness and made thrive, places that never stopped growing and places that were abandoned to history when opportunities were exhausted, places that rose and declined were reimagined and made to prosper again by the hardworking, self-starting dreamers Arizona attracts in such great numbers. I've been astonished by the resourcefulness of generations of Arizonans in Yuma and Page, Jerome, Kingman, Bisbee, and Flagstaff, who struggled, achieved, lost, and struggled again to build from their freedom and opportunities strong, prospering, decent communities in the challenging and beautiful place that had won their hearts. We will change as all places do. More people will come, as I once came, to make a new home or find the only home they ever really have in towns and cities and rural communities that will be better for their presence. Some will come from other states and some will come from other countries. They will face the challenges of their time and place. They'll suffer setbacks and they will stick with it and prevail. And years from now, their stories, character, and accomplishments will inspire other lucky newcomers, as I was once inspired, who came to live in beauty and make the most of their lives. I won't see it, but I wish I could. I don't know how much longer I'll be here. Maybe I'll have another 5 years. Maybe with the advances in oncology, they'll find new treatments for my cancer that will extend my life. Maybe I'll be gone before you hear this. My predicament is, well, rather unpredictable. But I'm prepared for either contingency, or at least I'm getting prepared. I have some things I'd like to take care of first, some work that needs finishing, and some people I need to see. And I want to talk to my fellow Americans a little more, if I may. My fellow Americans, no association ever mattered more to me. We're not always right. We're impetuous and impatient and rush into things without knowing what we're really doing. We argue over little differences endlessly and exaggerate them into lasting breaches. We can be selfish and quick sometimes to shift the blame for our mistakes to others. But our country, 'tis of thee. What great good we've done in the world, so much more good than harm. We served ourselves, of course, but we helped make others free, safe, and prosperous because we weren't threatened by other people's liberty and success. We need each other. We need friends in the world, and they need us. The bell tolls for us, my friends. Humanity counts on us, and we ought to take measured pride in that. We have not been an island. We were involved in mankind. Before I leave, I'd like to see our politics begin to return to the purposes and practices that distinguish our history from the history of other nations. I'd like to see us recover our sense that we are more alike than different. We're citizens of a republic made of shared ideals, forged in a new world to replace the tribal enmities that tormented the old one. Even in times of political turmoil such as these, we share that awesome heritage and the responsibility to embrace it. Whether we think each other right or wrong in our views on the issues of the day, we owe each other our respect, as long as our character merits respect, and as long as we share, for all our differences, for all the rancorous debates that enliven and sometimes demean our politics, a mutual devotion to the ideals our nation was conceived to uphold, that all are created equal and liberty and equal justice are the natural rights of all. Those rights inhabit the human heart, and from there, though they may be assailed, they can never be wrenched. I want to urge Americans, for as long as I can, to remember that this shared devotion to human rights is our truest heritage and our most important loyalty. Then I'd like to go back to our valley and see the creek run after the rain and hear the cottonwoods whisper in the wind. I want to smell the rose-scented breeze and feel the sun on my shoulders. I want to watch the hawks hunt from the sycamore and then take my leave, bound for a place near my old friend Chuck Larson in the cemetery on the Severn, back where it began. "The world is a fine place and worth the fighting for, and I hate very much to leave it," spoke my hero Robert Jordan, and for whom the bell tolls. And I do, too. I hate to leave it, but I don't have a complaint. Not one. It's been quite a ride. I've known great passions, seen amazing wonders, fought in a war, and helped make a peace. I've lived very well, and I've been deprived of all comforts. I've been as lonely as a person can be, and I've enjoyed the company of heroes. I've suffered the deepest despair and experienced the highest exaltation. I made a small place for myself in the story of America and the history of my times. I leave behind a loving wife who is devoted to protecting the world's most vulnerable, and 7 great kids who grew up to be fine men and women. I wish I had spent more time in their company, but I know they will go on to make their time count and be of useful service to the beliefs we share and to their fellow human beings. Their love for me and mine for them is the last strength I have. What an ingrate I would be to curse the fate that concludes the blessed life I've led. I prefer to give thanks for those blessings and my love to the people who blessed me with theirs. The bell tolls for me. I knew it would. So I tried as best I could to stay a part of the main. I hope those who mourn my passing, and even those who don't, will celebrate, as I celebrate, a happy life lived in imperfect service to a country made of ideals whose continued success is the hope of the world. And I wish all of you great adventures, good company, and lives as lucky as mine. Requiem. Under the wide and starry sky, dig the grave and let me lie. Glad did I live and gladly die, and I laid me down with a will. This be the verse you grave for me. Here he lies where he longed to be. Home is the sailor, home from sea, and the hunter, home from the hill. Robert Louis Stevenson.
The Restless Wave. Good Times, Just Causes, Great Fights, and Other Appreciations was written by John McCain and Mark Salter. It was read by Beau Bridges, with an introduction and conclusion read by John McCain. The music was arranged and performed by Matt Cartzonis. The recording engineers were Vianna Vigno at North Hollywood Sound in Los Angeles, California, and Pavel Sinev at Interface Media Group in Washington, D.C. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions, with music mixed by Terry Hogan. The associate producer was Aaron Larson. The Restless Wave was directed by Matt Cartzonis and Elisa Shokoff, and produced by Elisa Shokoff. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Restless Wave. Good Times, Just Causes, Great Fights and Other Appreciations is available in print from Simon & Schuster. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio. 13 Soldiers. A Personal History of Americans at War. Written by John McCain and Mark Salter, and read by John McCain.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.